This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, bringing to you the Short Talk Bulletin, published monthly by the Masonic Service Association of North America since 1923. This episode is special because it is the 100th Short Talk Bulletin podcast episode. For the occasion, we have a special guest, Brother Hummel.
This is Craig C. Hummel, past Grand Master of Iowa, bringing to you Volume 97 for July 2019, entitled Wither Masonry. It was originally written by Iowa past Grand Master Lewis Block for the 1930 Iowa Grand Lodge proceedings. Block was Grand Master in 1911. Although these words were written nearly 90 years ago, it is striking how relevant they remain in the Freemasonry of today. This article was more recently printed in the March 2019 Montana Freemason, and it is used here with permission. No Mason who has the good of the craft at heart, who values the prizes its associations, its comradeships, its friendships, and the tender memories that cling to these as he looks backward over the heart of hearts, all that Masonry has meant to him and has done for him, can help but be a bit concerned at the signs of disintegration and dry rot, which seems to threaten to slowly but surely destroy the fraternity. It is not the loss of numbers that fills him with the greatest foreboding. The things he fears lies far deeper than that. He can prize a mere loss of members at its real worth. He knows that that is not the worst thing that can happen to a society or institution. It is perfectly clear to the wide reader of present-day Masonic literature that things are far from being with our fraternity as they should be. Our ancient brethren believed in good company, good comradeship, in friendly intercourse, in hours of happy sociability and generous hospitality, but they had ideas of the eternal fitness of things, and they practiced them. There was with them a time and a season and a place for all things. Dignity and decorum and decency were no idle words with them, for at bottom they were earnest-minded men. So must we be if we would save the fraternity from certain destruction. We dare not let this spirit of frivolity that would feed and fatten upon the fraternity get the upper hand, as it surely will if we do not fight it. When all is said and done, the real remedy lies in the deepening of moral earnestness in each individual soul of us. It is not enough that we should learn to subdue our passions, but we must also learn to improve ourselves in Masonry, and we cannot do that until we come to know in our heart of hearts what Masonry means. Time was, we are told, when Masonry was considered to be a very select institution, and to be counted among its members a rare privilege. Then Masons were particular with whom they associated, with whom they fraternized. In those days, it was an article of Masonic faith that a man was first made a Mason in his heart, and not in his pocketbook. They didn't bother their heads about building big and showy temples, nor did they seem to care about belonging to big lodges with more members than they knew what to do with. What they wanted was an intimate association with worthwhile men, men who could come to know one another, respect and love one another for what they were, and not for what they had. Men who would help one another to do right, to be steadfast and true on all occasions without counting the cost. Masonry seems to have turned away from the speculative and the spiritual, to the mundane and the material, from the unseen things which are eternal, to the specious, the showy, and the short-lived, the permanent to the perishable. An editorial writer in The Builder put it this way: "We in America have been bitten by the lust for size, for numbers, for wealth. That we should be gratified by increase in our numbers is natural, and such increase is not in itself evil so long as the level of qualification is maintained. We have gotten ourselves into a state of mind where we have come to judge the success or failure of our institution solely by the numbers enrolled and the size of its material possessions. All over the United States, the craft has plunged into a perfect orgy of temple debts have caused the fraternity to resort to desperate measures for the raising of money. Under the stress of these conditions, the Mason who shows sufficient moral courage to blackball a blatherskite or a blackleg runs the risk of getting himself looked upon as an enemy of the order, when really he is the truest and best of its friends. You cannot make a Mason of a man who was not first made a Mason in his heart. Or, in other words, it is an idle and a futile thing to try to make a Mason out of a man who hasn't it in his heart to be made a Mason. To say nothing of the disquieting, depressing, discouraging, and disintegrating influence these men may have upon the rest of us. It is the most futile of financial policies to take them in. Such men are not of the sort that stick and stay. Should we worry at the exodus of that sort of frothy stuff from out the fraternity? What did we take them in for in the first place? Was it because we felt they could prove loyal comrades in laudable ambition and worthwhile endeavor? Or was it because we wanted their money to help us build a material temple? Were we practicing masonry for revenue only? From all over the Masonic world comes a wail of woe because our society seems to be losing, or at least not gaining, in membership. Yet that does not worry us nearly as much as some of the things we have mentioned above. There is a certain sort of Masonic membership that the less we have of it, the better for us, for the fraternity, for the persistence of our institution. Brother Robert J. Allen of North Carolina said, "No hostile church, no unscrupulous political group, no competition from other activities can or will do to Freemasonry serious harm. Her greatest danger is from the unassimilated material within. There is evidence of Masonic indigestion. The great danger today is not in decreased numbers through suspensions, nor in retarded accessions through scarcity of degree work, nor yet through finances, but through disintegrated moral. If a large percentage of our membership is not interested in Masonry, keeps its names on the rolls and does nothing more, there is naturally a very serious result upon those who otherwise would be interested workers. Well now, what about it all? You would have a perfect right to accuse us of perpetuating a piece of pernicious and pestiferous pessimism, did we not at least suggest the remedy. As we see it, that remedy is twofold. First, to guard well our portals and see that we take in no more of the trashy stuff, that we quit merely proclaiming this principle and failing to practice it as persistently as we proclaim it. Second, that we try to make real Masons of the men we have taken in, beginning first of all with ourselves, by striving not to be better than others, but better than ourselves. That we do our level best to beget a Masonic heart within the men we have taken in, to make of them Masons in spirit and in truth, and not in name only. And as for the rest, let us not worry to see them go. Let us rather rejoice that the fraternity has at last rid itself of such unregenerate and unredeemable rubbish, and that it no longer remains to corrupt a cherished and consecrated comradeship. If our effort is to be successful, it will require all the patience, the persistence, the forbearance, all the unremitting kindness and courtesy of which we are capable. Above all, it requires that we should consecrate ourselves anew to the cause in which we believe, a cause well worthy to command from strong men the last full measure of devotion."
This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, and this has been the Short Talk Bulletin Podcast. Please consider donating with PayPal to support the Masonic Service Association's worthy goals of disaster relief campaigns, hospital visitation, and the spread of Masonic knowledge. And thank you.